back to Screen of Consciousness, a podcast by Jonathan and Dimitri in which we discuss the films and television shows we love and hopefully give you some fresh and exciting and controversial perspectives on them. Before we start, we would like you very much to subscribe to us on whichever app you use to listen to this podcast, be it Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, whatever. There are about a million apps. I can't remember more than three at one time.
Also, please don't forget to find us on Twitter at Screen of C and on Facebook and Instagram at SFC Podcast. We're out there. We're constantly getting involved. Dimitri's doing a good job in tweeting and uploading videos and stuff. And
thank you very much. And doing controversial polls. We'd love to have more of you participating. The most recent ones on the Bechdel test and James Bond have certainly been interesting.
There you go. Yeah, you're right. It's always fun to see, you know, your feedback and hear what you think. Now, this week, as you probably guessed from the title, we're going to be doing 90s action films. Now, anyone who's listened to this podcast knows that we are, or at least me in particular, but I know you too, Dimitri, we love our 90s films, don't we?
Yes.
You know, 90s films, I think, are always going to be the best. And we can debate that as much as we want, but, you know, let's just go into it. So with 90s action films, I think, just to get a perspective, we talked about James Bond, you know, a few weeks ago. So we're not going to talk about the James Bond films because obviously they are, of course, action films. And we've already discussed the 90s ones, the Pierce Brosnan ones. And also, you know, with when it comes to action, there are some films that I would say are more thrillers than they are action films. And also adventure. For example, you know, Jumanji is an action film, but it's an adventure film. And also Heat, which is often quoted as being one of the best action films. I personally wouldn't say Heat was an action film. I'd say it's a thriller. More than an action film, although it has action sequences in it. So I think we're just going to talk about straight up action films.
Yes.
And I think the best place to start, of course, is with, you know, the ultimate action star, which is, of course, Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I think he has done my two favourite action films of the 90s and probably two of the best action films ever made, which are, of course, Terminator 2, Judgment Day and Total Recall. I think these two films probably sum up the 90s in terms of action. And coming out of the 80s, of course, 80s had loads of action films that were usually very gory. And we had Die Hard, of course, which was kind of putting things on the map. We also had Tony Scott directing films like Top Gun and Beverly Hills Cop 2, which gave a completely new style of action. And then we've got Terminator 2, which, of course, is a sequel to the original film Terminator, which came out in the 80s, which, of course, is, I would say, you know, a bit slower paced, more of a kind of thriller, but it does, of course, have lots of gore and lots of action sequences to it. But Terminator 2 is just such a big, bombastic film, isn't it, Dimitri? I mean, what do you think about Terminator 2?
Yes, I as I feel like I'm often saying this on this podcast recently, but I was a weird child. I always liked dramas, you know, I still do, but I feel like many genre films, even action, which isn't really like so much a niche genre as say horror is, but still, even that, it just didn't really interest me as a child. So many action films I've either first appreciated or even first watched as an adult, I'm pretty sure that I actually never have seen, at least like properly seen in its entirety, Terminator 2 until a couple of years ago. And I have to say, I was blown away. So I feel I'm grateful for this because I do have this fresh perspective on films that are, you know, like almost 30 years old now.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I think I'm with you. I just think it's a glorious film. And I think, you know, it's very broadly viewed as being superior to the original, which is a rarity. I definitely think it's, yes. I mean, the original, you know, it's super low budget. It certainly proved how talented James Cameron was, but I think Terminator 2 is just brilliant, and I think probably I would say it's Cameron's best film.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think you're right to say that. I mean, Terminator 2 is such an amazing film because, of course, Terminator 1 was more straightforward in terms of there's a villain, there's a hero, there's a villain chasing the hero, and also chasing there's another hero, so there's kind of two heroes that the villain's chasing. I think what's really fresh and different about Terminator 2 is that Sarah Connor, who of course is the main character from Terminator and also the main character in Terminator 2, she has a completely different role in this film. and it's on its head, and I think that's why it's so much more interesting. And also, instead of Arnold Schwarzenegger being the villain, which he is in Terminator, he is now the hero. So it's really just an interesting gear shift in terms of the film, and I think it really makes it original. And we talked about Jurassic Park in our Steven Spielberg episode, and I think what's really good about Terminator 2 is it uses CGI to an extent, but it doesn't go so over the top. We've got cool CGI sequences, mostly involving the... I can't remember what the name of the other robot is. The villain robot. The one that melts.
T-1000, I think?
That's it, yeah. The villain robot.
It's a shape-shifting... Terminator,
yes.
Yeah.
So we've got the T-1000, and obviously the bits when it melts and kind of turns into magma it shifts. It looks amazing. Even still today, I think it looks pretty good. It doesn't look terrible. But we still have these really amazing action scenes that are all filmed in real life and they're not CGI'd, and there's, you know, trucks being exploded and, you know, lots of things happening, lots of guns. And I think this is the thing with the early 90s. They still had that balance, whereas now, you know, everything is just CGI, I think, and that's what makes it look a lot worse, in my opinion.
I would say, actually, I agree with everything you said, but I would add, looking ahead, we will talk about, I think, The Rock and Michael Bay, and... very explicitly not being a fan of Michael Bay. I think it already starts later in the 90s that it's just... even the explosions become just more fake. Partially think that it's also James Cameron, again, before he went insane with Avatar, but he really stuck to his guns for quite a while, making, like, really good action, somehow grounded in reality. I would just say... I think the acting, as we often come back to in genre films, I just think a lot of them really depend on the acting. And I think here, Linda Hamilton is great. Yes. Arnold Schwarzenegger, let's talk about him in general a little bit later, but I think he's awesome. And it's interesting that he shows, you know, yes, he goes from villain to kind of co-hero. Mm-hmm. I do think, you know, that shows some acting skills that I think people deny him unfairly. Robert Patrick, I think, as the villain, is also fantastic. And just also his face, I think Cameron... understands this, which another thing I think in modern films, the casting is just way off. Robert Patrick looks, I don't mean this in a mean way, but I think he does look kind of evil. He's just, you know, he's powerful. When you see him on screen and for the first time, even, I think you kind of notice him and you're like, damn, you know, he looks bad in a way that I think even Schwarzenegger didn't. Schwarzenegger has this very square face, but there is something kind of ominous in Robert Patrick, and I think that was a good sort of upgrade. And I also do think, actually, just want to say, you know, having seen it, as I said, just a couple of years ago, I thought the CGI was great. I don't think it's really aged that much. I think it works totally well 30 years later. It's really been 30 years this year since crazy. Terminator 2.
Well, that's insane. I mean, and then I'd like to talk about Total Recall, of course, which I think is just one of my favourite films anyway. It's such an amazing film. And yes, it's very cheesy, it's very over the top, it's very 80s in the way it looks, even though it's technically a 90s film because it came out in 1990, even though I think it's more of an 80s film. But, you know, it's just so camp and it's so funny, and it's also just been so kind of... it's inspired a lot of other films, and it's definitely, you know, created a lot of memes and in jokes and stuff, and it's just such a great film. And I think, once again, Arnold Schwarzenegger, yeah, his acting isn't great, but I think in this role it's funny because he's kind of ridiculous. But, you know, we've got Sharon Stone, and we've got, I think, Rachel
Tikotin or Tikotin, I'm not quite sure how to pronounce it.
Tikotin or Tikotin. I mean, she's great, I think, as well, as another supporting character. And there's lots of, like, great roles in this film. And Total Recall is just all out, over-the-top, gory action, things exploding, things, you know, going crazy. And, you know, the ending is epic. I think this is the thing with action films, compared to, for example, Heat, which some may say is an action film. These Arnold Schwarzenegger films are epic. They are massive. They're taken to another level, not necessarily because of CGI, which I think that's how people see it nowadays. I think they just have ideas, and they also have sets and sequences that are epic. Because, you know, when you think of Terminator 2, okay, not, you know, one of the most famous scenes is when Arnold Schwarzenegger is driving a big truck down a storm drain. Now, that's not necessarily the biggest thing in the world, but it looks epic because of the way it's filmed. And you were talking about James Cameron, you know, doing a good job. I think that's a big part. And also, you know, Total Recall, of course, is directed by
Paul Verhoeven.
Paul Verhoeven. And he can just makes it epic. And of course, you know, Total Recall is based on a short story by Philip K. Dick. So already it's a big idea, but it's kind of taken, it's elevated up. And I think that's true for Last Action Hero, which is, of course, another Arnold Schwarzenegger film. But Last Action Hero was a complete bomb when it came out. It did really badly. And I think the reason why is because it's essentially a meta movie, isn't it? The whole point of the film is there's a film in a film. Arnold Schwarzenegger kind of plays himself and doesn't play himself. It's a bit too much for a lot of people. And I remember watching it as a kid and not getting it. I didn't understand it at all. And I didn't really like it for that reason. And then one of my friends a few years ago said, no, you have to watch it again because it's such a brilliant film. And I rewatched it and I realized, actually, this film is incredibly clever. It is actually really funny and smart. And it's got so many meta references. It's essentially like, I would say, it's like an episode of The Simpsons, really, in a way. Because it's kind of just taking the mick out of action films, but still being an action film.
Yeah, I see what you mean. That's also a film I saw recently and actually was really impressed with. I have to say, I think it's three interesting films that you choose there. I know they're starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, but they're also different because I think Terminator, in a good way, I think that's a serious action film. I mean, James Cameron is not exactly known for his sense of humor. So I think, you know, that's obviously a serious film. Paul Verhoeven, I think, is the opposite of James Cameron because he does kind of... He constantly spoofs and critiques, I think, these big Hollywood genre films. Even while actually making great Hollywood genre films, it's so evident, I think, both in RoboCop, Total Recall, of course, the kind of epitome of this, because, you know, will be Starship Troopers. But I think even Total Recall is, as you say, it is kind of gory, and he's always making a point about the violence. And I think the casting of Arnold Schwarzenegger is also quite ironic, I think, from the director's side, right? Because he's kind of... Because he's almost over the top. Like, he is, and at that point already was famous as the sort of cliche of an action star. And I think it does come together beautifully. I do think also it's a fantastic film. And then Last Action Hero, I guess, is this sort of... It's a very clever film. It's meta. It also has... All of them have great casts because Last Action Hero is just incredible with Charles Dance and F. Murray Abraham. In smaller parts, you have Ian McKellen playing Death from Ingmar Bergman's great film, The Seventh Seal. Do you remember that? There's one brief scene towards the end. It was incredible. Danny DeVito does one of the voices. Tina Turner and Sharon Stone both appear very briefly, and even Sylvester Stallone. So it's always... It's so referential to other Hollywood things, but I think it's a really smart film, a funny film. I was, I was really, really impressed and surprised, especially because it got such bad reviews. I didn't really expect anything from it, but I think it's seriously, and it's a great action film as well, even while being this kind of meta spoof in a way.
Well, I mean, I know from personal experience that, you know, working in television, that people the gatekeepers in television and film hate meta stuff. They hate it. They don't ever want to make shows about shows. Let's put it.
Is it because they don't get it?
I think it's because they don't like the kind of illusion broken. They don't like the barriers pulled down between them and everyone else. They don't like kind of mocking themselves, which once again I think is why The Simpsons was such a genius show, because they were allowed to kind of completely take the mick out of TV and film, and they got away with it, and they were successful because of it. And yeah, I guess Last Action Hero is a victim of that, isn't it, really? Because it bombed. And that's because all the critics obviously hated it.
Sorry, before we move on, because we didn't mention it, but I think it's worth mentioning, obviously, that it's directed by John McTiernan, yet another great director who gave us Die Hard.
Yes,
and Predator, of course. And The Hunt for Red October. So again, this is a man sending up a genre of which he's a master. I think maybe it's worth pointing out, because there have been... certainly kind of action comedy spoofs in the last 10 or 20 years, a lot of them. But one, mostly they're not actually funny or witty, because they're just pretty dumb. But two, also they're directed by talentless hacks who don't know how to make action.
Well,
and I think that's a big difference, having John McTiernan or Paul Verhoeven send up the action genre.
I think
35-year-old with, you know... some kind of culture studies degree, whose uncle is a big producer and who gets a chance to make it and thinks that now he's going to mock those films for regular people.
Well, I think, you know, watching any of the new Star Wars films, we can see that the directors don't understand how to direct action.
Oh, they don't.
Or anything, really. And I think this is where, you know, they need to watch these 90s films to really realise how you do it properly. But just because you mentioned Die Hard, I just want to mention Die Hard with a Vengeance, which is the third Die Hard film. We already talked about it in our Christmas episode and the Christmas Eve episode. I'd just like to say, like, we don't need to talk that much about it again, but Die Hard with a Vengeance is my favourite Die Hard film. And I think it's very 90s in the way it's done, the way it's shot, the way it looks. Also, the fact it's about New York. And New York is really a character, I would say, in it. Mm-hmm. And also the fact Samuel L. Jackson is a supporting character. It's kind of a buddy cop, although he's not a cop. It's kind of a buddy, you know, cop style, mm-hmm. which obviously they're kind of inspired by Lethal Weapon, which is, of course, a big series from the 80s, which also went into the 90s as well, another action film. And also, I'd just like to mention another Samuel L. Jackson film, which you may have not seen.
Can I just say, I always did love Die Hard with a Vengeance as a child as well. I really want to rewatch it now. I haven't seen it since I was such a child, film. But I saw it several times. And I just want to say, because I think this is funny, that, you know, being a Russian kid growing up in Denmark, I think that scene where Bruce Willis goes into a black neighborhood with, I believe, like a racist poster, right?
Yes, he does.
I think that was my introduction to racial tensions in America. Yeah. I was like, oh, why is that dangerous?
I wonder if that beginning will actually be edited now, because I remember seeing it on TV quite recently, and I think they changed the beginning. I think they just blanked out what it says on that sign at the opening.
Because it's, you know, something fairly offensive, right?
It is offensive, yeah, it is offensive. But, you know, as you said, that sets up... That's what it was like in the 90s in New York City. You know, that's unfortunately the real world there, and the 80s was even worse, you know, as we've discussed before about Beverly Hills Cop and the way that Eddie Murphy's character is treated in that film. You know, that's unfortunately the way it was. Well, moving on to another Samuel Jackson film briefly... which is called The Long Kiss Goodnight. Have you seen this or heard this film? Because I feel like...
I haven't even heard of it, nope.
So it's Gina Davis. Now, for those of you out there who don't know who Gina Davis is, she was a big, successful actress in the 90s. I think she was in the 80s. She won an Oscar in the 80s as the Best Supporting Actress, or at least the early 90s. And she was a massive box office kind of, you know... very successful actress, but she kind of didn't really move past the 90s, which is interesting. But The Long Kiss Goodnight is so 90s in the way that it's such a bizarre film, and it's basically about a woman who's kind of a homemaker, has a normal life in the suburbs, and then suddenly she realizes that she's actually an undercover sniper, kind of assassin.
That's a 90s setup right there.
Yeah, and then she just basically has to go around trying to kill people. And Samuel Jackson, once again, has been cast in as the kind of similar role he is in Die Hard with a Vengeance, which is her kind of sidekick. But he's great in this film, and she's actually great in this film, but it's so explicitly violent and gory and over the top. And, I mean, talk about explosions for no reason. It's crazy. It's a crazy film. But I think it's probably the only film that we're going to mention that has a female protagonist. So I think it's just interesting that we discuss this one film.
Wouldn't you kind of say that
Terminator 2
has a female protagonist?
Okay, you're right. Okay, that's the other one. But I guess Arnold Schwarzenegger is still kind of seen as the main character in Terminator 2, even though I guess she should be, right?
I think we can easily say that they're kind of both our leads. I think that's an interesting question of, I think maybe if you break down the story, she's the protagonist, but because he is Arnie, and obviously he's kind of the one we want to see most when watching that film. I think he does kind of pull the rug over to himself, but I almost imagine that technically she would be the protagonist.
I think you're right. I mean, she should be, really, but
then
I guess
again, maybe he has a bigger journey. Yeah, maybe I'm actually wrong, because he kind of does have a lot of character development in that film, doesn't he?
I think she does too, actually. She
learns to trust him, right? Because she hates him, of course. Isn't that because, yeah, obviously she remembers him as the killer. Yeah. Good question. Maybe this is honestly a question for one of our Twitter polls. Who is the protagonist in Terminator 2? I'd love to hear what people think.
Well, because also, don't forget, Edward Furlong's character is, you know, John Connor is a pretty main character too. There's kind of three protagonists.
Yeah, we'll give three options.
Yeah. Well, anyway, but I just thought it's worth mentioning The Long Kiss Goodnight, because it is such a 90s film. And as I said, it's the only one I can think of apart from Terminator 2 that has a female protagonist. But moving on from that, I recommend...
Before you do, once again, I'm just Mr. Director today. This was directed by Rene Harlin, most famous probably for directing Die Hard 2.
Oh, there you go. Die Hard 2. Well, I can see why, because Die Hard 2 is extremely gory, and The Long Kiss Goodnight is also extremely gory, so I'm not surprised to see that or to know that. I think the other... We kind of mentioned at the beginning Tony Scott, and how his films were so influential in the 80s. And I do think he also made some very influential films in the 90s. I don't want to go over them too much because I'm sure that we will have a podcast about Tony Scott in the future because, you know, I'm a massive fan of him as a director.
Jonathan loves his Tony Scott, I can tell you.
I do. But one
not
film
his Ridley Scott.
No. But one film I'd love to just say is Days of Thunder, which is, oh my gosh, I love this film so much. Everyone needs to watch this film if no one's seen this. It's a Tom Cruise film. And I think Nicole Kidman's in it as well, actually. I think this is where they met, or at least, I don't know, it's got something to do with that. Anyway, so it's essentially a racing film. So it's about Tom Cruise as a race car driver. But, oh my gosh, I mean, this film, this shows you why Tony Scott is such a brilliant director, because the way he directs it, you know, there's not many explosions or action scenes or guns, but it's so fast and dynamic, and the way it's shot with the cars racing around the track and the tension that Tony Scott builds in this film, I mean, it's such a great film. I really recommend it to anyone.
Haven't watched it. I only know it from the Simpsons episode, exactly. Saturdays of Thunder.
Brilliant episode, one of my favorite episodes. And of course,
is it actually like somehow related to the film?
No, not at all.
It's mostly the
race
title.
Car. I guess that's it, basically. And Bart has a soap car in it, doesn't he? Soapbox Derby or whatever. But that's it. And then, of course, we've got other 90s films from Tony Scott, which, like, The Last Boy Scout, which I have seen and I didn't like very much. And then Enemy of the State, I'm not a massive fan of. But, of course, I do love, and you love as well, Dimitri, Crimson Tide. I mean, what a brilliant film.
This is another film. I literally watched it 1 or 2 weeks ago. And I think in my mind, so this, you know, this happens, I think, when you do love films, and there's a lot of films. I kind of had it mixed up with The Hunt for Red October, which I think is a crap film, I have to say. Yeah. And I was just, and then of course I know the Simpsons episode Simpson Tide.
Yep. There you go. Once again, Tony Scott. He directed some bangers. That's all I can say.
And I was like, I think that's partly why we're doing this episode. That I was just kind of, yes, I missed good action films and action thrillers. So I've just been watching a lot of 90s films recently, and I was like, I think I saw, you know, in some list of the best action films from the 90s, I found Crimson Tide, and I was like, oh, that's that stupid U-boat film with Sean Connery, right? And I was like, oh no, wait, that's a completely different film. I literally was not aware of its existence properly. And I watched it. I thought it was great. I thought it was such a good film. And I also think the big difference for me with Hunt for Red October is that this is kind of very intelligently post-Cold War, I think, where it's about preventing war, you know, like World War III, not kind of like, yeah, we're gonna win. I think this is a smart 90s film, and again, unfortunately, that's all out the window because now Hollywood is putting such pro-war propaganda out there, and I think the Marvel series is horrible at that because it is kind of a weird commercial for the American military-industrial complex, I think.
Oh my gosh.
but it is. I think if you break it down, it's always American superheroes kind of.
Well, we can talk about this in our superhero episode.
But Crimson Tide, I think, yeah, let's do that. I'm going to tell some home truths, as you say. But I think Crimson Tide was a very smart film about how you can be patriotic and, you know, manly, because it's very much a male film. Not rushing into war, by preventing death rather than, you know, dishing out death. And that's unusual, because action films are, of course, mostly about killing.
About murder,
and how it's cool. I think that's an interesting film, and of course has two great actors in the two leads, Denzel Washington and Gene Hackman. Both, I think, of them quite likable characters, and both representing, I think, actually, it's a film about masculinity in a large part, and how there's different sides to different kinds of masculinity which are equally good. Well, maybe the film says one is slightly better than the other. But, you know, I think it's awesome. And again, if this film had worse actors, it wouldn't work. It works, I think, on the strength of those actors and the great chemistry that they have together.
Of course. I mean, yeah, you're right. Like, Denzel, obviously, his career took off in the 90s, and Gene Hackman's career kind of, when I say ended, I don't mean in a nasty way, but he stopped acting after the 90s, didn't he? Like, so
yes, he stopped. He's still alive, bless him. But he retired. Which is unusual now, but I think it's quite dignified in a way.
Yeah.
And I just want to say, I think he's just one of the best Hollywood actors.
Yeah,
Gene
I mean,
Hackman.
yeah, you've got two heavyweight stars in this film and a heavyweight director, I would say, because Tony Scott's directing, once again, he creates the tension and the thrills. And I mean, he's just a master. When he does it properly, he does it really well. And I think this is a perfect example of that. But we'll talk more about
him. Could I say, I also think it's really well written. I think,
yes, the script,
by
of course.
Michael Schiffer, it's a very good script. The way I would say, you know, as a screenwriter, how the introduction, how the characters are built and introduced, it doesn't interfere with the flow of the story. It's very fast-paced, but you really get a very good feel of the characters and also the environment in that film, which I think is, you know, quite impressive. You never see that now. And also Viggo Mortensen, I think, in one of his probably first big parts in that film, and James Gandolfini, The Sopranos.
Yeah. Okay, that's interesting. Well, let's instead of talking about an intelligent action film, let's move on to the less intelligent action films. Now, there's these films that I think we kind of grouped together, but there's some big massive hit films in the 90s, which of course Speed was one of them. And then we've got all of Nicolas Cage's films, such as The Rock and Con Air and Face Off. Now, Speed, Dimitri, you watched it recently for the first time.
Another film I just watched, I think, the day before yesterday.
Yeah. And I'd seen it, I'd grown up watching it. So for me, it's very hard to have an objective opinion on this. I liked it as a child, but I have to say I stopped liking it because I kind of thought it was a bit stupid. And I realised it was pretty hammy as well. I think it's very over the top and I think it's 90s in a bad way, personally, now. But Dimitri, your fresh perspective on it, I know you've got opinions on it.
I gotta say, I think it was shit. I can't get... This film has 94% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. This is, like, almost impossible. Like, even, you know, something like The Lord of the Rings, whatever you think of it, you know, it's a critically acclaimed film, but I don't think The Lord of the Rings even has that kind of a rating. This is just incredible to me. I literally don't know what people saw in that. I think you put it very well, John. I think this is a bad 90s film. I think it's a film that has aged very badly. There are obviously, okay, there are cool action scenes. I think the idea of this being set on the bus is cool, but then, as you mentioned to me, Jonathan, before I watched it, maybe you prejudiced me, but I have to say, I think you're very correct about that. I think it doesn't work, because they don't really go with it. The first act and the third act are not set on the bus. Yes. Or the second
and
one
I
is, and I think you just
I think
either...
they're the best bits. I think the opening is very tense, and I think the ending isn't tense, but it's silly and funny in the 90s way, because I mean I love the bit when the villain gets decapitated. I think that was always funny as a child. But I think those two moments are really kind of interesting action set pieces, and then the whole second act, as you're saying, on the bus, to me is very kind of samey. It keeps going, nothing really happens with it.
I probably prefer that, although I agree with what you're saying, but I feel like at least that's interesting. The other things, I think that could have been and has been in so many other films. I mean, an elevator sequence, I've definitely seen better elevator sequences in my life. But I also just think this is a bad script in terms of like the dialogue. I think this is very 90s kind of, they try to have like cool one-liners that are just, to me, this destroys for me an action film, because this is too, it's very flippant, very glib, and I just feel like I can't take it seriously in terms of it takes me out of the tension. If the characters, you know, you're on a bus with a lot of innocent people who might die, and you know, you yourself might die at any point, because if the bus goes below a certain speed, a bomb explodes. I mean, that's a pretty ridiculous premise anyway. But then you're kind of making like sexy jokes, and I'm just like, I don't believe that, and two, I just think it undermines the tension, and it doesn't add anything because the jokes are bad. I also think this is a film, I feel I'm sounding way more woke than I am recently in our podcast, but it does, you know, watching it now, it's from 94, so almost 30 years later, I think this film is strangely offensive. And that's not to say, you know, because it's old, because I think there's nothing offensive about Terminator, nothing offensive about certainly Crimson Tide. I think in Speed, the female character played by Sandra Bullock, well, I think she's supposed to be a strong character, but I don't really think she is. She just takes orders from the men all the way through.
Well, yeah, she is a damsel in distress, isn't she, really? That's essentially what she does. Especially with the, as you said, the ending on the train. I mean, that is just her being
know, yeah, she doesn't really do much. Yeah. I think Keanu Reeves, oh, I have to say, not a fan. I don't think at all he has either the acting skills or, frankly, like, physically. Then, if you can't act, then I want to see an Arnold Schwarzenegger. And he's not an Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's kind of this sort of slightly runty, I think, with this horrible haircut. He just looks like an 18-year-old. I just really don't think he looks cool. Jeff Daniels in a kind of semi-serious role. I think I saw recently a TV series called The Looming Tower, a fantastic TV series about the run-up to 9/11 with Jeff Daniels in the lead. He does a great performance there, so I don't want to put down Jeff Daniels, but I don't think he works here. And also, I have to say, on the bus, mostly the passengers are ethnic.
Yep.
And I think all of them are pretty offensive caricatures. There's an old black couple with a lady being quite overweight, and we cut away to them. They only cut away for like 5 seconds, about five times in the film. And they're always like praying or yelling out kind of, you know, black mannerisms. And it just seems like weird. Then, I'm sorry, there's like a Latino American man who in the beginning just kind of pulls a gun at a cop and starts yelling again, you know, with a very thick accent like, "Oh man, you're here to take me down." And it's just sort of really weird and insensitive, and he then shoots the black bus driver.
Oh, he's
and then
the
no one,
one
really cares about him.
Okay, so he just disappears into the background,
The bus driver or the Mexican?
Both.
I think he's Mexican. Maybe they kind of both disappear. I mean, the bus driver. Sometimes we see him bleeding out, and no one really cares that much. I think there's definitely kind of like an unpleasant undercurrent of non-white people are disposable in this film.
Yeah.
And I think the villain is horrible. I mean, Dennis Hopper, you know, he's a decent actor. I don't think he's great. But here, I think it's the writing. He's literally in several scenes shown, like, cackling. And I'm like, you know, I'm sorry. This is not, like, the evil witch of the West. It's just ridiculous. His motivation is one of the worst motivations I've ever seen. So he was a cop. And he had his finger blown off and got a pension. And apparently the pension was smaller than he would have liked. So he goes around, like, murdering tens of civilians. And I think this is, in the current climate, this is just so absurd about, like, this unbelievable arrogance, I guess, and sense of entitlement of the police force. That if your pension is not sufficient, you are going to become a terrorist and murder civilians. And then also, I'm sorry, this is such an Austin Powers moment. His demand at first, when he traps, like, 15... rich bank employees in an elevator, his demand is $3 million. I'm pretty sure they would pay him off. They earn $3 million. Each of them earns that in a year.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you've said a lot of things about speed, Dimitri, or as we know from The Simpsons, the bus that wouldn't slow down.
Yeah.
I think what people need to do is, if they haven't seen it, they should watch it. If they have seen it, they should rewatch it and kind of see a fresh approach. And do you agree with Dimitri? You know, because he's saying quite a lot of controversial things. I wonder if other people would agree with him on this. I mean, as I said, I kind of got sick of watching this film, so I kind of agree that it's such a disposable action film. It's not like the other films we've mentioned, which you can rewatch again and again and enjoy. I think it's just a bit silly. It has a very silly premise, and because of it, it's just so disposable. And on that note, I'd like to move on to Face Off, which also has a very silly premise, which I loved watching this as a kid. Like, I thought this was such a good film. And then now realize that it's just all of the films we've mentioned, The Rock, Con Air, Face Off, they're just an excuse for Nicolas Cage to ham it up. I mean, he's so hammy in these films. It's funny to think he was taken so seriously in the 90s. Like, he was a massive action star. He won an Oscar in the 90s, okay, because of his acting. And then when you rewatch it, you're just like, he does the same thing again and again. He's just so super hammy. And maybe it works well in an action film, although I think, I don't know, I'm not sure if you agree. I mean, The Rock, he's not meant to be so hammy, though, is he? He's meant to be kind of serious in The Rock. I think in Con Air, he's meant to be hammy, and Face Off, of course, he goes over the top. But he was, you know, these were massive box office successes. We can't forget that.
I think he's terrible. And I'm going to say that. I think whenever we talk about Nicolas Cage, let's remember that he is not a Cage, but a Coppola. And he's the nephew of Francis Ford Coppola.
Yeah.
And if he were not, he would never have had an acting career. I mean, the man is talentless. And as an action star, he's a joke. He's this kind of sort of whiny, mopey, I guess relatively, like, intellectual man by film standards. Why he's running around, punching people out, saving the world. I just, again, just recently, a couple of weeks ago, saw The Rock. I thought it was god-awful. And I just couldn't take Nicolas Cage seriously. I've never been able to. But I think, if anything, I think he's better in comedies or dramas. I think he was pretty good in Raising Arizona, one of the... I think that's the second film by the Coen brothers. I think that's an interesting film. And I do like Leaving Las Vegas, for which I guess he won his Oscar.
Yeah, he won his Oscar for that. I mean, yeah, it's a good film, and he does... I think he's a good actor in it, but I definitely think that Elizabeth Shue, who is the second main character in the film, I think she's the one who deserved the Oscar rather than him. I think she gives a better performance than he does, a much better performance, and I'm surprised that she didn't win the Oscar, to be honest with you. Because then, yeah, once you watch that film, he just does the same thing again and again and again in every single other film. So it's kind of disappointing. I guess at the time, maybe people were like, oh, he's doing something new. Anyway, we're not here to talk about Nicolas Cage. We're here to talk about action films, right? And
He sure made a lot of crappy ones in the 90s and in the noughties and in the 10s.
He did. He kept going. But I think we should go back to kind of good films. I'd really like to mention briefly two Stephen Sommers films that I really love. Now, of course, The Mummy was a massive success. I would say it's an action film. It's also got horror elements. It's got adventure elements to it. It is a great film. And Stephen Sommers, you know, he knows how to direct an action film, and he knows how to do it with all the genre, you know, moments in it as well. But his first film...
doesn't forget to put in beautiful women.
Exactly. And the first film he did that really put him on the map was actually Deep Rising, which I love. And most people have never heard of, but I have noticed that there's been a resurgence of love for this film on Twitter and the internet, mainly because I realise it's just on Disney Plus now, in the UK at least. So I rewatched it because I'd never seen it in HD, because I only have Deep Rising on a DVD from the 90s. That's how old my DVD was. And it was hard to find, actually. I have to say, it was really hard to find. And I rewatched Deep Rising. I was like, oh my gosh, this film is such a good film. I mean, it's extremely gory. I think the thing I like about Stephen Sommers is he, you know, a lot of people in Hollywood talk about action films or blockbuster films saying that they have to appeal to 13-year-old boys. That's kind of the Hollywood saying. If it appeals to a 13-year-old boy, then it's a blockbuster. So that's why we have endless Marvel superhero films, essentially, now. But Deep Rising is appealing to 13-year-old boys, except it's not a PG-13. It's like a really gory R film. Or an 18, or in England. It's really gory, but it's still really silly and fun. It doesn't take itself too seriously, but it also doesn't go too far into stupid. It's still kind of got the sense of tension and urgency, and the monster in it is actually quite disturbing and scary. So I really recommend everyone watching Deep Rising, because it is a great film, and it's kind of underloved, and it needs to be more loved, I think.
I think, you know, this is one of the reasons why we do this podcast, and I hope one of the reasons why I listen to us, the film recommendations, because I am a huge Stephen Sommers fan. I love Van Helsing primarily. I really like The Mummy. Bless me, I even like G.I. Joe. I love Sienna Miller in that film. But I'd never heard of Deep Rising. Literally, I had no idea it existed. I will be watching it very, very soon.
Yes, you have to. You have to. I would lend you the DVD, but it's really a poor quality. So hopefully you can find it somewhere else. But I think we need to wrap this up. There's so many more films we could talk about. There's so many more films that I love. We haven't even got to mention some of the blockbuster films, for example, like Twister, which I wouldn't really say is an action film, but that was a big hit. And now I recently rewatched that film, and it is terrible. But anyway, we won't talk about it.
I actually have seen it too, and it is awful. We didn't get to Mission Impossible, which maybe is weirder, but then I almost feel maybe we should do some franchises separately, because there's a lot to unpack in films like these.
Well, I definitely think with Mission Impossible, you know I'm a Brian De Palma fan. I think we can easily talk about that in Brian De Palma's episode. But I would like to say, actually, speaking of Mission, we might as well talk about Mission Impossible and The Matrix, because they are the two big hits of the 90s as well. With Mission Impossible, for me, Mission Impossible, we talked about in our James Bond episode, we talked about how the James Bond didn't really have a style, or they don't really have a kind of visual style until more recent ones. I think with Mission Impossible, this was Brian De Palma, who obviously has a very distinctive visual style. He took action films and he toned it down, but also elevated it in terms of it looks like a spy film that we would now recognize as a spy film, because the way he filmed it and the way he did it is just so kind of iconic. And there's so many moments in Mission Impossible that have been, parodied, especially in The Simpsons as well, and in lots of other things. And I think, you know, he took a television show and made it a very successful franchise, and also, you know, made a big hit for Tom Cruise. And I think I saw this film in the cinema as a child, and it scared the crap out of me, because the opening is really scary and loads of people get horribly murdered, and I didn't quite understand how it was a suitable film for a child. I think this film is extremely dark. So when we're comparing it with the other films, like, for example, let's talk about, you know, we talked about the Nicolas Cage films, which have a kind of happy, they all have happy endings, don't they? Even though they're disturbing and gory. Mission Impossible is actually extremely dark, doesn't really have a happy ending or any kind of happiness the whole way through it, I think, which makes it very different from the rest of the films. I mean, I don't know if you agree with that.
I would need to rewatch it. I okay. hardly remember the first one, but I just, I want to end on a note that you made me think about how Brian De Palma did the opposite of what we see today. He took a TV show.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure. Was it successful? I guess it was, Mission Impossible.
Yeah, I guess a little
sort
bit.
Sort of a middling TV show, and turned it into a super successful film, which of course spawned a massive franchise. Now what we have directors do, and producers, and writers, and actors, everyone, are taking great films and turning them into crap TV shows.
Yes, that's because true.
Everything is now becoming a TV show, and they're all awful.
Well, we're still waiting for Turner and Hooch, right?
With bated breath.
Exactly.
Yes.
But
Six seasons, I think. Let's
mention very quickly The Matrix. Of course, The Matrix is one of the most iconic films ever made, and we have discussed The Matrix before. In
our very first episode, didn't we?
Yes, we did. Yeah, we did. Now, The Matrix, of course, as I've said many times before, The Matrix, you know, made everything green in terms of color grading, and also had so many unique visual styles to it that have since been replicated multiple times. I think as a film, when we did discuss it before, we said that it's dated and doesn't necessarily hold up as well as it should. But it's still a fairly watchable film, you know. Unlike the sequels, it's a good film, I think. I'd like to say, you know, it's a good film. It's a good action film. It's still got really cool action sequences. And it has a really high concept idea, which is, you know, what we kind of discussed with Total Recall. And it's interesting, actually, that The Matrix came out at the end of the 90s. Total Recall came out at the beginning of the 90s. And yet they're still both kind of sci-fi with high concepts, with lots of action in. And they were both big hits. So what does that say about that kind of genre, really? Maybe action always has to have another genre to it?
And we certainly see the attempts, my goodness, it seems like all the action blockbusters now are somehow sci-fi, because it's either, you know, King Kong in the future, or Planet of the Apes rising or falling, or whatever it does.
Godzilla.
Godzilla, or Pacific Rimming.
Oh God, Pacific Rimming. I think that's a great idea. A great title. That title probably would have sold the film. It probably would have been more successful if it was called that. It's a shame.
Also, if it actually was about that, it would also have been more successful.
It's probably true. It's a shame that there's so many more other action films we could discuss from the 90s as well. But I think, you know, we need to kind of end this now. But I'd love to maybe we could talk about this topic again, because, you know, I could talk forever about action films. I love action films. You know, they're brilliant. And it's a shame we don't have any really good action films going on at the moment, because as we discussed in the James Bond film, James Bond episode, I'm still not overwhelmed with the modern James Bonds. And also, I don't think the Marvel films, I mean, they're not really, they kind of are action films, but they're not really action films. Some of them are good, some of them aren't good. It's kind of hit and miss with them as well. So I feel like we really need a big, good action film to come back again.
Non-superhero action film. Non-superhero,
yes. Exactly.
But I think we can talk about that in a superhero episode. I think 90s action films are wonderful to watch, and the great thing is that there are so many of them.
Yeah.
I've myself now noted 5 films from this discussion that I need to see that I have never seen. And I also think they were lovely to talk about. And I'm really looking forward to hearing your opinions, dear listeners. I'll be doing plenty of polls on our Twitter page. So please go to Screen of C on Twitter, or S of C Podcast on Facebook and Instagram to interact with us. And please, please remember to subscribe on whichever platform you use to listen to us. We'll be super happy. And you're also very, very welcome to subscribe to our Facebook page.
Yes, and we'll be back again next week. So please tune in then, when we're talking about another very fascinating topic and celebrating and kind of critiquing the films that we love. So join us again next week.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.